Welcome to the I Spy with My MyoEye podcast. I am your host, Brittany Murphy. I am a certified oral facial myologist, registered dental hygienist, and lifelong learner. My goal with this podcast is to bring you up to date in current literature and expand your knowledge of oral facial myofunctional disorders so that together we can get to the root cause of the problem. You ask, we'll answer by collaborating with true pioneers and specialties associated with the myo world. Join me on this journey as we dive into the life-altering world of tethered oral tissues and airway space. Let's do this thing. Quick disclaimer, all content expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the speakers and is for informational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitute for, nor does it replace, professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Because every person is so unique, you should always consult with your specialized healthcare professional. Dr. Loria Nahadas is a board-certified pediatric dentist who has been in the pediatric dental field for over 25 years. As a teenager, Dr. Loria knew she wanted to become not only a dentist, but specialize in pediatric dentistry. After completing her biology degree with summa cum laude honors from the University of Texas at Arlington, Dr. Loria graduated with her dental doctorate from Baylor College of Dentistry in Dallas. She then completed her two-year pediatric dentist residency at the University of Maryland, Baltimore College of Dental Surgery, and shortly after became a diplomat of the American Board of Pediatric Dentistry. She is co-founder of Beyond Pediatric Dentistry in Dallas, and her focus in pediatric dentistry is optimal craniofacial health, growth, and development. She has realized from personal experience that if a child's craniofacial growth is off track, it affects their ability to breathe, sleep, and thrive. Being a lifelong student under world-renowned leaders in the growth and development field, she is proud to give her young patients and their parents valuable tools that help with improving dental health as well as overall health and well-being. She is dedicated to making a difference in every child she sees, working with a collaborative approach to oral healthcare. Dr. Loria is the first recipient of the Dr. Sarush Zaghi Award for Application of Evidence-Based Protocols to the Community at the AAPMD's Collaboration Cures 2021. She has also completed her one-on-one affiliate training with Dr. Zaghi in April 2022, giving her patients the best experience possible when it comes to pediatric functional frenuloplasties. She takes pride knowing she can help drive change and impact the quality of life in families in a positive manner. Good morning, Dr. Loria. I'm so excited to finally have you on today. So welcome.
Thank you, Brittany. I'm so excited to be here. I mean, I remember when we met, I got to meet you in person last September, the AAPMD collaborators, and I was so honored that you asked me to come on. So we finally did.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to hear from you. So let's just start by letting the listeners know a little bit about yourself. And I know you're a pediatric dentist, but how you kind of made that shift from more general pediatric dentistry to airway dentistry?
Well, and I love pediatric dentistry. Like I was working as an associate, just loved doing quick, beautiful fillings on little kids. And, you know, just it was fun getting them through the challenge of, you know, getting injections and doing great work. But my eyes opened. So Dr. Lauren Ballinger, which I think you've actually had a podcast with her, she opened my eyes to all of this. And I'm so grateful for her kindly mentioning something about my little girl. And she was excited. She started going down this journey, I think 2 years before I did. And she said, Loria, you know, your little Alice, she was only three at the time. She's like, your little Alice is so cute. And I was like, oh, thanks. Cause you know how nowadays everyone keeps up on Instagram. And so she was like, but can I mention a few things I see about her that, you know, we could get started with Libby earlier, you know, Libby's her daughter. And I just see things in Alice that I know you could work on maybe now. Is she a mouth breather? And at first I was a little offended because, you know, you think mouth breather is like mouth wide open. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's like, when she's, and I was like, well, no, she doesn't. She's like, no, but what about when she's asleep? Is she mouth breathing? And I've of course said no. And she said, well, go take a picture of her. And we have that type of relationship where we can challenge each other. Cause we were residents together.
That's so cool.
In our pediatric residency. So we're dear, dear friends. So it's not like she just, you know, we've just met and she just started telling me things. So, I went and took a picture of Alice, you know, expecting to see her little lips together. And lo and behold, she was sleeping with her little lips just, you know, just apart, just a little bit. Reading, and I could see her talking, you know, now looking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, this has been happening. And funny thing is, her voice was very raspy. I recently had taken her to an ENT because one of my other colleagues was like, Loria, Alice's voice is a little raspy. I thought it was cute. Mm-hmm. And she was like, what if she has, you know, polyps or something on her vocal cords, and kind of freaked me out a little bit. So, I already kind of started going down to see what's going on with that. Her tonsils were pretty big, mouth breathing. And so Lauren was like, okay, I know what I can do to help her, fly her up to see me. And I live in Dallas, Texas, and Lauren lives in the Berkshires in Massachusetts. So, but I'm the type of person where if I know something, I can fix something or I can do something now, I'm going to do it versus like, oh, let's just wait and see. So I booked a ticket 2 weeks later to go to Massachusetts with my little, she was almost four at the time. And she took a CBCT on her. We, you know, sent it off to the radiologist, and we started with simple things. I mean, she taught her how to clear her nose. And so we started doing that every night, and then also started with just like a little MyoBrace infant trainer, just to, you know, just encourage that nasal breathing, lips together, all the things that I did not know about back then.
Yep.
And then after seeing it in my daughter and seeing the changes, then I went back to the practice I was working in, and it's like, oh my gosh, all of these kids are mouth breathers. They're all sitting there, you know, waiting for exams, staring at the TV straight ahead with their like this, just mouths wide open. Mm-hmm. And I mean, so many light bulbs started going off in like a short period of time, like why we're seeing teenagers who are getting braces over and over again, because, you know, they're closing their open bites. And then lo and behold, 2 years later, they're open again. Why? Maybe function's off, right? So that's how I started going down. So it was all because, and I feel like a lot of people who do this, it's personal. Mm-hmm. And then you see that, oh my gosh, I can help so many other moms and other patients start something super, super early and get them back on track.
Now you, the practice you were working in at that time, was it your own practice or you were working for a different practice?
I was working for another practice, amazing, beautiful practice that I was there for 10 years. I mean, for a little bit. So I've been practicing now, I think this summer it'll be 18 years as a pediatric dentist. So, but I've been in the dental field like forever, I think over 25 years now. Cause I was in a dental assistant just to make sure I really wanted to go to dental school while I was in college. So I worked in a general office actually at first, like just observing, and I hated it. I remember backstory even more. My uncle in Greece is a dentist. So I'm half Greek.
Cool.
I would go visit there in the summers. I would go to his office, and I loved what he did. Like I loved him. I loved what he did. His office was like so modern. Everything was like white. You know, all his patients loved him. And I was like, this is what I want to do when I get older, you know, like this is awesome. And so I went and worked in a general office or observed. And I was like, no, I don't think
not for me.
Saw that. And he was like, Loria, you know, there are other specialties. You don't have to do this. If you like dentistry, you know, my best friend is, you know, a pediatric dentist, and he was actually my pediatric dentist growing up. He's like, why don't you go observe him? So yeah. I went and observed him, and I loved it. Like it was so fast paced and it was so fun, and he was fun, and they gave prizes. And, you know, I was 18 at the time, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Yeah. So I decided like then that I wanted to actually be a pediatric dentist. So I went into school knowing I wanted to specialize 2 more years, and he was just such an awesome mentor. So I go to residency, meet Lauren, come back to Fort Worth, and that's where I'm from originally, Dallas, Fort Worth area. So Fort Worth, and I worked with him, and it was so much fun. So then I moved to Dallas because I met my husband and some other family things happened. And, so I started working with another mentor of mine, who she's lovely. And then we opened a practice together. So I had a little bit of ownership experience, but at that time I was just like you, I just got married. Mm-hmm. I got pregnant, you know, we're very blessed that happened very quickly. And it was just too much, like ownership, having a practice, you know, we were partners, but I was doing a lot of it, you know, cause it was a second location. She'd had this other practice for a long, long time. And after that, I was like, I never want to own again. I just want to go to work doing what I love to do, come home, be a good wife and be a good mom. Mm-hmm. And I was doing that for a long time. But then after this happened and my eyes opened, I was like, oh my God, I can't. And it's really hard. I mean, it's really hard to integrate looking at all of these extra things. Cause then when I would start pointing it out, and she was, you know, my other person I worked with, she was very open to all of this and saw these things. And, you know, I mean, she was sending people to myofunctional there. We had one myofunctional therapist really in the Dallas area that everybody knows about, who's been, you know, and she would refer patients to them quite frequently. Now everybody could do it just because it's, you know, it's a lot, and they had to drive a little bit to get to her. But she saw all of this, but it's just really hard. Cause then when you start bringing up things to parents, they're like, why hasn't anybody said this before? Mm-hmm. Why has this been missed? You know, why did the orthodontist put on braces two times and not realize that they're thrusting their tongue in, you know, and I keep bringing that example, cause that was like a big eye opener for me. Yeah. So, I mean, and what one of my mentors told me is that you just tell them, you know, Loria, you know, or tell whoever it is, like, let's say Mrs. Smith, you know, we're like, you know, as providers, we're like iPhones, and you have the iPhone 4 and it wasn't bad. You never look back at it and say, oh my God, the iPhone 4 sucked. Like, it was so bad. It was terrible. Why wasn't it as good as the iPhone, you know, whatever it is now, 13, 14. But it's like, we're constantly improving and learning more.
Love that analogy. That's a great one.
Yeah. I use that a lot because we have now, because Carla and I, so Dr. Carla Damon and I, we have a practice together doing, I mean, this is pretty much what we do. We're a comprehensive practice, but Carla and I focus mostly on growth and development, tongue ties, you know, myofunctional therapy, working with other providers. And we, since last June, we've had another pediatric dentist come in as an associate, and she does all of our restorative work because we don't have time for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's really hard to switch gears between doing restorative work and then jumping to like an airway exam or appliance checks or doing tongue tie releases. So we've been really blessed, and I feel like I was put on this earth now to help other moms do all of this. Yeah. And it's just really, really rewarding.
Now, what ages do you guys treat in your clinic?
I mean, from infants all the way through, I mean, for growth and development cases, like if somebody comes in or they call and they're like, I have airway issues, my child has crowded teeth, da, 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 and they're like 12, 13. Carla and I, at first, we wanted to save everybody. But because we're pediatric dentists, we've decided to start 9 and younger. So we start, you know, with like growth and development checks out. Now with infants, we do tongue tie releases, you know, but we only do those if they're working, like we require IBCLC or some type of feeding therapist. You know, we highly recommend body work. So we're not also not the practice that you go in and get it done and then everything, voila, magically is going to be better. Like we know journey, and we like having that support because we can do a perfect release. But if we don't have the support around it, it's not going to be ideal. Like we're not going to have a good outcome. So we're very picky in the patients that we like to work with and moms, but the ones that are like, know that, you know, it takes a little bit of work on their end. And of course on our end too, I mean, of course we take full responsibility, you know, or a lot of the responsibility, but they know that, it's a lot of it's up to them too. So.
Absolutely. Now those 10 and older, children, do you guys have like a local orthodontist that you refer them to?
Yeah, we have a couple that are more, I mean, yes, we do. Yes.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about tongue tie. I feel like this is always a question that comes up, and I know it's very different provider to provider, and sometimes even just patient to patient. But if you're working with, you know, a child for growth and development, they have a tongue tie, they need expansion, or they're in expansion, when do you typically recommend the tongue tie? Would you recommend it before they start expansion or after they start expansion?
Well, if they are borderline, like, and we have certain numbers that we look at, but what I really look at, I tell moms all the time, it's really, do they have, when, if they do a suction hold and the first time they come in the office, a lot of times these kids cannot suction their tongue up, or what they call a cave or some, everybody has different names for it. But if they do that and I can see the lateral borders of the tongue, like overflowing onto the occlusal surface of the teeth, I say, you know what, there is no room for this tongue to fit. So I like to make space in the garage. Cause if we don't, it's like, and, you know, and sometimes they come in, they're like, oh my gosh, their tongue is so big. I'm like, no, their tongue is not big. I mean, there are cases where there is true macroglossia, like Down syndrome patients and other, you know, syndrome, but, you know, we have to make room in the garage. So it's like, they're trying to park like a big truck in a little bitty Mini Cooper garage. Mm-hmm. So in those cases, you know, I do like to expand first and then we do a tongue tie release. Now, if they're like 4 or 5, you know, years old and they're borderline, then we say, okay, work with Mayo first. Cause even that naturally, you know, and especially, you know, then it's like, they're so malleable. It's like things get back on track and then tongue tie release. And then we reevaluate growth and development in like 6 months to a year and see if things are back on track. See that we're gaining space from our measurements that we took today. If we see that they're not, or things are getting worse, which they usually aren't, but if things are getting worse at that age, like 4 or 5 early on, then we can look at expansion. But usually, you know, then if we see, and we treat symptoms too. So it's not like we go and do expansion on every kid just because we're close together, you know? So when they're usually, if they're under 6, it's if we do we use the pediatric sleep questionnaire and, you know, just from other providers to issues that they're having. But, and then we also, you know, send to ENT, like, it's just, we always, it's like, okay, we can do at this age, we can do, like, every patient's different. So I don't have like an exact recipe, but, you know, ENT is involved a lot of times, you know, SLPs or hygienists that are trained in myofunctional therapy. You know, we do expansion, or, you know, sometimes if they're older, I mean, we will see patients if we're seeing them for comprehensive care, and then we just refer them out, but we just let them know too. It's also a journey. It's not like, you know, we do a tongue tie release and everything's going to work, you know, and everything's going to pop into place.
Absolutely. Now, as far as expansion appliances go, do you have like your go-to favorites that you use regularly? I always like to ask different providers that, because I know from a myofunctional therapist standpoint, like, it's so good for us to know all the different kinds of appliances that are out there, because I feel like providers, you know, they prefer different ones over the other. Is there one that you do prefer over the other?
My favorite is for little ones, like ages 4 to 6, 7 are just traditional, like hang expander with the acrylic. And it's like similar to like BioBlock type that are, we love removable expanders. And if we could give all kids removable expanders, we would. But what we've learned is some kids are not compliant and they don't listen and they mess with them and they've been a while. In all the time. So I always ask the parents, and I actually got this from Kevin Boyd. You ask the parents, you know, how well does your child listen to you, or how compliant? And if they have to sit and think like, and if it takes more than seconds, then it's like, okay, they're not getting,
you're getting it fixed.
If they're like, oh my gosh, they're a removal. They know right away, you know, how their kid is. Okay. A removal would be a great option. So, that's typically what we use. I mean, just, you know, we've used sagittal expanders. We use lower Williams appliances to upright teeth on the bottom. I mean, we've Crozats, you know, like that's something that I've learned more about, and, Carla's been using as well. So I mean, we just have different tools for different.
Yeah. And that's, it's so important. And I love that, because I feel like, to your point, not every patient's different. So what might work for one child might not work for another. What about myofunctional guidance appliances? Do you guys use any like MyoBrace, HealthyStart, Vivos appliances?
We do use MyoBrace. So, and the reason why is because, I mean, that's something that, I mean, that's how I was introduced into all of this. And it's one of the very first courses, because Lauren, you know, Lauren used, I mean, in her old practice when she used to work with her dad and uncle, they had like a whole MyoBrace like center, like they had a room. And it was awesome. And, you know, she had all the appliances. I thought it was so neat. And that's how my daughter Alice started, just with a little infant trainer. So we still got into the show. That's one of the first courses I went to that taught me. And I remember Herman Ramirez spoke at that course. And gosh, I forget who else, but it was just really, really good and eye-opening, just about the importance of tongue positioning, lips together, breathing through the nose, all of that. And then, you know, these appliances in the, you know, of course, everyone shows cases where it's like, everything's amazing and everything's great. Now, what we've learned is that the same thing, it's not for everybody, right? And it's not like some people claim, you know, some of these appliances, like this is myofunctional therapy. It's like, no, this is not myofunctional therapy. These little appliances are training wheels for myofunctional therapy. So the activities are actually more important. So you don't have to have the appliances. The appliances are like a plus, you know, if it's a fit with the patient as well, you know, like, it's not a plus for everybody. And what else about those? Yeah. I mean, that's what we use. I like we use the lip trainer a lot when we're using reverse pull face mask for patients, like to help bring this forward. This is something another tip that, you know, Lauren taught me. Whenever we deliver the reverse pull, we usually teach them to use the lip trainer, and just to help strengthen all of this, because it helps bring everything forward even better and faster. What else? And I also really like the Mayo Chew from MyoBrace.
Yes.
Yes, versus the munchie is great too. Like, I love how, I mean, we've given little infants a little baby munchie, you know, the bebe.
How cute is the baby munchie? Like, every time I see it, I'm like, this is literally the cutest thing.
I love it too. I'm like, it's so fancy. It's like the bebe. yeah. And now they have the mini munchie, which is really great, I think, for patients who have past, like the kids that are coming to me, they're like, we can't stop the pacifier. We can't. I'm like, well, how about we use this as like a pacifier replacement? Now we can call this their big boy pacifier, there, you know, and it's helped a lot too with kiddos with that age.
But now, then what do you like? I don't want to say better, but maybe what do you find different with the MyoChew?
The MyoChew, it has, you know, it has that little tongue tab, which I really like. And it just, I just feel like it conforms a little bit better to the mouth. But the main thing I think is a little tongue tab, and it just reminds them where to put it.
Absolutely. And,
I
absolutely love that you call those training wheels for Myo and that they're not a replacement. Like, every Myo functional therapist that listens to this episode is like totally going to quote you on that because it's so true. And there's so many people that I know that, you know, they'll call and they're like, oh yeah, well, they've had a Healthy Start appliance for however many years. And I'm like, well, have they done any Myo? No, they're doing the Healthy Start. I'm like, yeah, but like they go together. They're much better, you know, together. I mean, yes, like at night passively, it's going to work on, you know, promoting that dominant nasal breathing, but it's not a replacement for Myo. And even, you know, the Myo Brace program, I know that they have that little tutorial of exercises, and like, I do think it's great for maybe families like who have a financial barrier, maybe they can't get to see a myofunctional therapist, like maybe something is better than nothing. But at the same time, like, I'm always so stressing when we teach our myofunctional therapy course, our Team Myo course, that not every patient needs every exercise. Or to your point with what you said with expanders, like what one exercise might work for one child isn't going to work for another child, even though we're trying to work on the same muscle. So it's not a cookbook recipe. So to just like hand a family this like computer program of Myo exercises, again, it's better than nothing, but you're not, it's like going to a gym and getting a personal trainer versus like following along on YouTube at home, right? You're always going to get better results when you have that actual professional that's guiding you along.
Absolutely. Yes.
Now I want to talk a little bit about, so if you have a patient, and I'm sure this also, I feel like everything is like patient specific and like, you know, how much are they obstructing, but tonsils and adenoids. So you have a patient that has enlarged tonsils and adenoids. Obviously, you know, there's some great research coming out that palatal expansion can help shrink those tonsils and adenoids. Are you guys more in the realm of working with the ENTs to have those removed or putting them through expansion first and seeing what outcome we get from that?
Well, I feel like if they're completely obstructed, like they need to go see the ENT. Like, there's nothing, you know, and we have a lot of parents who just do not want to have surgery and don't want this. And, you know, I'm like, you know, we're going to hit a point where, I mean, your child, so are they already can't breathe. We're going to put something else in their mouth that's going to add more resistance to breathing. It's going to make it even harder. I mean, yes. So that, you know, the article, I think, or one of them that just recently was published recently, like about a year ago, that, you know, showed how the volume of the tonsils and adenoids they do get smaller with expansion. And, you know, I have had people go to the ENT, or a fellow colleague dentist of mine, she went to her ENT for her child and she asked him about it. And he was like, how is that possible? How is the expander making the tonsils shrink? I'm like, well, they're not actually making them shrink. It's because we're changing mode of breathing. You know, it's like, what's about it? Right. So, if they're complete, like if I see the adenoid tissue, because we always send our CBCTs off to the radiologist, if they say like adenoids grade 3 and I can see it, it's like, okay. And I'll even tell them the day that they're there, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is why your child's like mouth breathing. And you can tell that adenoid face. I can see that now. Or big tonsils. But if they're like a 2+ or 3 tonsil and adenoids are like a 1+ or a 2, like we've seen them get smaller, you know, like we've seen them, but we can't bring a grade 4 tonsil to a grade 1 from what I've seen, at least. I'm not saying it's not possible, because I've learned to never say that, because someone But for a grade 4 to 1, just with expansion, you know, like that's that usually, I think it's a piece, like one of the parts of the puzzle, but you know, sometimes they do truly need, I mean, yes, I think there's a time and place for everything. I've come to the point where I used to follow everything was just so black and white. This is the, you know, how everything, but it's like, this is truly like one of my mentors, Steve Karstensen, says that this is a thinking person's game. You have to like really think about each patient and what's best for them and then give parents options. And that's what I'm really big about. It's like, okay, you could go this route or you could go this route. You know, go ENT first, then OMT, then we could, you know, reevaluate for possible tongue tie release if necessary. Cause you know, we still have ENTs around here that are like, tongue has nothing to do with sleep. Okay. You know, I mean, yeah. All right. So yeah. So we just, you know, so I always say, you know, I can reevaluate this at the very end, you know, with about the tongue, but you know, these two, like I'm not an ENT, but I just strongly recommend you get an evaluation and just see what they say. So,
and I think that's so important because, you know, families sometimes can get very overwhelmed, especially when they're not coming to you for this specific problem. It's something that you're presenting to them for the first time. So to like, give them all these things all at once, like 5 referrals at once, like do all of this and then come back and see me. Like, whoa, they're gonna be like, yeah, no thanks. We're not gonna do any of that. But right. If you can kind of just baby step it for them, right? I just find that it's so helpful. And, you know, through years of experience as a pediatric dentist and like for us as, you know, hygienists, I feel like we're able to read families and faces and like you can tell when a mom or a dad is just like Darren had like, whoa, this is like way too much information for me. So breaking it down in smaller pieces, like you said, go see that ENT, start the myo, we'll reevaluate this in 6 months. Then maybe it's not so overwhelming for them. And we're still going to get to our final destination. We're just kind of chopping it up a little bit for the families.
Right. And just prioritize. And what we've learned as well, like when we first opened this practice, I mean, I'll never forget, there was one patient that came in, bombed out, like decay everywhere, needed IV sedation, behavior was terrible. And then of course the most narrow palate, tongue tie, like everything. And I presented everything at one time. And the mom was like, oh my gosh, you know? And so Carl and I have learned, it was so, and I mean, yeah, it was just a lot, but you know, you're excited. It's like, oh my God, I see this. I just want you to know this, and this is what we can do. And, and so what we've learned is just to plant the seed. And, you know, because decay is a disease, like we want to take care of that first. We always take care of the fire first, which we say, if they come in with a mouthful of decay, have that taken care of. And then after we have that taken care of, because we're not going to put appliances in mouths that have bombed out teeth and, you know, have issues. So once we get that done, then we can come back and take our photos, CBCT if indicated, and come up with a plan, you know, but right now let's focus on doing this first, and then we'll come back and address everything else.
Do you ever have families that, like sometimes this happens to us where, so again, all myofunctional therapists kind of practice a little bit differently when it comes to this. I prefer that the child has the expansion. Well, it depends on the age, of course, but I rather them have the room first and then us work on the myo, because it's just going to go a lot smoother. It's not going to be as frustrating for the child and as difficult, and it's just going to make for a smoother myofunctional therapy process. But sometimes what I find is, usually what I recommend with my providers is have them come see us prior to the expansion so that we can do their comprehensive evaluation, point everything out to the parents. That way we're already educating them, because sometimes what I find is children will go through expansion. Parents are seeing the results, the beautiful results and the wide arches, you know, they're spacing in the teeth are filling their smile. And then they're like, oh, well, that's good enough. Like, we don't have to do that mile thing now because this looks pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. Do you ever have families, even maybe like with tongue tie, does that ever happen where like they go through expansion, families are seeing, you know, these great results, and then they're like, do we really have to have the tongue tie released?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the patients, so the ones that come to see us, Brittany, really are just like 100%, they want to take care of it all. They're similar to how I was with my Alice, you know, and it's like, they want to do, it's like, if we're going to do this, but then, you know, even though you get expansion, sometimes they still have snoring, they're still mouth breathing because their tongue doesn't magically. And that's what we explain at first. So we take a lot of time, like explaining like tongues, you know, Dr. Zoggy's tongue space, tongue tone, and then tongue tie. So it's like, if the tongue isn't tone, it's like, you've spent all this time and money on expansion. But is it going to stay? Is it going to, or is it going to relapse? It's going to relapse, not maybe to where it was to begin with, but it's not going to stay ideal, which is why you're here and what we want, you know, how we want to help your child. So they know. And then we always, you know, are asking questions every time they come in. There's like a little quality of life questionnaire that we use, like even just with expansion, it's like, how is sleep? How is this? How is that? And we have like specific things that they check off. And, you know, when we still are seeing all of these, you know, some of these things that are off, it's like, okay, still need to do this, still, you know, like we're still, you know, and sometimes if they do say that, you have to respect what they want. You know, you can't, like, it's like, I want to like make everybody do the right thing. I think is, it may not be right for them or may not be right at the time. Like I had some patients where over a year and a half ago, I recommend doing some things and they just showed up on my schedule again. And where they were in the office yesterday, mom was like, sorry, it's time. I'm like, no, I understand things happen. She's like, you know, but what's interesting is when you're doing the right thing and doing things, she's like, well, I was taking a walk with my neighbor and she told me how her daughter, you know, had a tongue tie release with you and she did the myofunctional therapy. And, you know, and what's really cool is it was by Stephanie in our office. She's a dental hygienist. She's about to finish that big, you know, 9-month program with the Breathe Institute, but she got prepared her and did afterwards too. But she's like, her neck pain is gone. Oh, you know, like all these other things, like headaches she was having, so much better. And she's like, and you know, when I think about my son and all the issues and tightness and all of this that he has, like, I think it could be related. Do you? And I'm like, probably, but I can't 100% say that, you know, like that's something it's like, we can't say like, this is going to fix this. Cause I've had patients with tongue tie releases, like different things afterwards, where I'm like, oh, interesting. You know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, now, what about, what does like readiness look like for you guys before a tongue tie release? Like, what do you want to see the patients being able to do?
My main thing, because since I did the affiliateship with Zoggy, is just suction. I want suction hold and to be able to hold it for 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I explained to parents beforehand that it's not like they're going to have to just suction hold the entire procedure. It's really an endurance game. So I have one myofunctional therapist I work with. She's an SLP. It's awesome. She has them do 10 1-minute holds like in a row. Mm-hmm. That way, because that's, you know, that's what they're going to be doing. And I tell the parents too, I'm like, you know, we get to this like 2-minute mark or sometimes 90 seconds. If they're younger, they can't do it as long. It's fine. I just want them to be able to hold a suction for just, you know, a few seconds at a time. And then I give them a rest and then we do it again. And it's really for that initial release, just so I can see landmarks and pull all those vital, you know, like the nerve and vein, you know, back. So it's not there. And, so that's really it. And I just, them being able to sit in the chair, because I do every release while patients are awake. Like I don't do it under IV or I do use nitrous oxide. Just as a pediatric dentist, I love nitrous. And sometimes parents that don't want nitrous, I just like having the nose on with oxygen just as a distraction. Yep. So they see these instruments passing underneath their chin and see what's going on. And, mm-hmm. you know, I have like fun names for everything I've come up with.
That's adorable.
Yeah. So,
and what about, I'm sure, cause I know you trained with Dr. Zaki. So are you placing sutures on everybody?
Yes. Every patient. If I feel that, so that's part of the readiness check. Mm-hmm. If I don't feel, and I can tell that even from the first exam, when I see them the very first time, if they're all over the place, I'm like, you know, behavior wise, like I want to do, even if we wait 6 months, continue with myo, like the stronger and better we can get this, you know, because they can hold it, but then they're like giggling and like jumping all over the chair while doing that. It's like my big thing is sutures. Like now that I've seen the difference, because when I first started doing releases, I was taught, oh, it's fine. You don't even need to, you know, like not, you don't need to, but whether you do or don't, just do a release, you know, and now just seeing differences afterwards, like I have to place sutures. So if I feel like I can't, I won't do the case. Like I won't do it.
Now, yeah. So you find that placing sutures, the healing, there's less like scar tissue, less chance of relapse.
Yes. Yes. Less chance. And it just heals nicely. Like a new frenum, you know, we all know a new frenum forms and it's like a really beautiful, nice frenum. And it just keeps remodeling even for 6 months to a year afterwards versus, you know, where it's like thick and mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, yeah. And I just feel like sometimes that could even make patients worse. If that tissue's too, because sometimes if they're not behaving well and it's like, oh, well, parents will do the stretches but if they're not behaving well in the chair, how are we going to do stretches at home on a 4-year-old or 4.5-year-old that's not compliant or 3.5-year-old? Like I'd rather wait on a 3.5-year-old till they're 4. And even that little amount of time makes such a difference in behavior. I mean, you can, you know, from like 2.5 to 3, 3 to 3.5, 3.5 to 4. I mean, they mature so much and they're able to, I mean, the youngest I've done in a chair. I remember he was so teeny tiny. He was 4 years old, like 4 years, 0 months. But man, he like suctioned and he would hold that and he sat.
I love it.
But of course, his mom was a dental hygienist.
Well, I was just having this conversation with my husband last night. I'm treating this 4-year-old and he is just a sweetheart. I mean, he is engaged. We sit on the floor, we play together. I'll say, okay, well, how about we hold our suction for another 30 seconds? It'll be like, I think that's a good idea, Miss Brittany. And like, of course, that's not all the 4-year-olds that you're working with, but a lot of it is the parents and his parents. They're so engaged with him. They're so encouraging and positive. They don't, you know, they're very present in the session. So they know what's going on, but they're not, you know, butting in, or if he doesn't do one thing, you know, I don't want to say yelling at him, but some parents, you know, do. And it's just so important, those parents, when we're working with these kids, and you guys know it best as pediatric dentists, like the parents have to be in 100%.
Over 100%. Yes.
Yeah, such a world of difference. And yeah. For me, I know when it comes to like sutures, not sutures, to your point, it's like, I wouldn't want to have to get my hands in there and open this wound the day I have my procedure done that next morning. Like, I'll do it if I have to, but like, it's not going to feel good. So right. Like, if we can place sutures on these kids and then they don't have to stretch it for a few days, you know, I just find it just goes so much easier because they're able to get in there on day 4, start their stretches. They're not in as much pain because those first few days have subsided. Some of the inflammation has gone down. And then, you know, even the parents that do get in immediately when there's not sutures placed, it's like, how well are you really going to be able to stretch this area? Because just getting your fingers in there isn't going to do enough. Like, we have to literally, you know, push back and up on that wound. And that's why I'm such a proponent of sutures too. I just feel like it's just, you're setting yourself up for much better success.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And especially those little ones, like, I mean, sometimes I'm sure it's not. So has it ever happened where like you had a patient in the chair and then behavior went wrong and you weren't able to suture them?
I've had
like, one. I'll get those sutures in.
No, I mean, there was one where, I mean, the poor child, and this is so he was so tired, like class 4 Cotwell, like could not do anything, but had been working with a great myofunctional therapist in East Texas. And she was like, Loria, he could just, this is as far as we can go. Like, this is definitely going to be a 2-stage release. And he was one of those, though, he was all over the place. And so it took forever. And it took a long time just to, you know, make him numb. And, you know, at one point I was like, I don't know if I can do it. And in my head, like, I sit and I take a second and I'm like, okay, if I don't do this, nobody's going to do it. And this poor child is suffering. Like, that's why he's all over the place. He's not sleeping well at night. And, you know, we did it. And he kind of, you know, was, and they also have an emotional release sometimes, which is really hard for kids, but I make sure, you know, everything's like super duper numb because I always clamp and just gently check and whatnot. But I got one suture in and I was happy because, and that's what Doggy said to you, you have to have in your mind, like you have to be able, like whatever you open, like think in your head, like release where you're going to help a patient. And then think in your head, okay, can I close this? Like, can I get out if I need to, if something happens with this child? So I don't go in and just like, woo, and make this huge open wound, you know? So I open it, I placed one suture in the middle, which took way longer than... you know, but I had to do it. Like, it was one of those things that I'd pass it one way. And then I just like, you know, let him like sit for a second, finally got the second one. And then, you know, you have to tie it. And usually I use a 4-ochromic gut suture and I tie it 4 times. And it's like each tie, it's like, okay, break. Okay.
You're practicing your nasal breathing in between just so you can stay calm throughout the process.
Yes. Yes. Cause I'm like, please just... But the changes afterwards were so amazing. The mom was like crying afterward. I mean, it's just so neat to be
amazing.
Do a bit, just being an affiliate too with Zog. I'm like, okay, what would Dr. Zoggy do? Okay. And if I don't do it, like, you know, and you know, there are only 4 pediatric dentists in the country who are affiliates as of right now. And it's like, okay, if I don't do this, like who's going to do it? You know, they're not going to go do it. Then these are parents that don't want to go under general anesthesia. They don't want to do anything because we have a great oral surgeon that we refer to do tongue tie releases if needed, like on these patients that we get sometimes that are like 18 months to 3 years old, 4 years old, where it's like, okay, they can't wait. Like they need something done now and it's been missed and they had all these issues. It's just so fascinating to me. It's sad how all of these things are missed as a baby and they come in and it's like, oh my God, like how is your child living right now? You know, like how, like this is really sad, like how much they have been compensating and we need to do something about it now. So yeah.
And I want to talk about one last thing before we wrap up. How do you guys address like the anterior posterior with appliances? Are there certain appliances that you use for that? Are you more, you know, uprighting teeth?
Yeah, absolutely. We upright teeth and then we use a reverse pull face mask is great.
Oh, yes, you said that before.
Yeah. We like using that. And then even like little sagittal appliances, you can get that, you know, just having more tongue space to get everything more forward with myofunctional therapy. And that's where we talk about, you know, nasal breathing, lips together. Like I would say, I feel like a record every day and all our team members do too. habits and tongue habits include tongue tie, you know, and so we really stress, like, especially when they are a little bit older, like you have to, I mean, all our patients, we have to do myo. Like at first, Carl and I were doing every patient that would get expansion. We would call it the expansion myo brace because we would finish everything off. Like we would expand, hold for, you know, however amount of time we wanted to hold. Usually it's about 6 months with the upper expander. And then we do myo brace for a year afterwards. But it was, you know, once you start seeing cases and it's like, okay, this isn't for everybody. So now we do like, you know, expansion. We adjust financially, like if I know they're going to see an OMT or we include OMT here in our office to do like 10 sessions or whatever. So it's like expansion, 10 sessions, OMT, and then we decide if we need to do more. So it's like, and I tell parents, it's like, this is just how we do it. And if we don't, because we're going to have relapse and I don't want to, and it's for me too. It's like, this does take a lot of time and effort. I don't want to waste, like I have limited amount of time. You know, are you a good candidate for us to help you and help your child? Because if you're willing to do these things, we know we're going to see great, great results. And I know because I've done it with my kids, right. You know, so I have two little kiddos that I've done. They're 8 and 10 now, but it's like, I know through all of this, thank God I did all of this early. And now my goal is if they need ortho in the future, it's very, very minimal. And, you know, and they're like, oh, so you're, and I never say like, so they come and ask me like, are my kids going to need braces later? Like, I can't say that. I don't, you know, our goal is to make enough space for everything. And then at the end, it's also what your expectations are of a nice smile. And, you know, if you're good with, you know, maybe a few little rotations here and there, that's fine. But if you want things like a picket fence and perfectly straight, then we're probably going to go into brackets or Invisalign later, but it's not going to take as long as it would if we did absolutely nothing, you know?
Now, are you guys doing the brackets and Invisalign in your office or do you refer out for that?
We usually refer out. We do like little 2x4s, you know, just to help align some things in the front. And then, there have been maybe just not many cases that we're doing. I mean, for a friend, I'm doing something as a, like a courtesy, like she's my high school friend.
Yeah.
I have her daughter in braces, but because I expanded her and sagittal expander too from Dr. Hang and made so much space. I mean, the difference I made in this child, it's like, it's so exciting to see her big smile. And then she had some spaces. I didn't want it like somebody to go in and like retract everything.
Oh my God, all your hard work. Now, is there ever a time where you're doing 2 expanders on a patient?
Absolutely. Or we re-zero a lot. So because we have patients that are coming in and, you know, just to give for those who don't know, I'm, you know, numbers, like if they're 6 years old and they're 22 millimeters in between their second primary molars. And at that age, we need to be like 31, 32. So on those cases, we expand and then they either go into second appliance or we re-zero, like we add acrylic in the middle just to make it go a little bit farther. Okay. And the parents know that from the beginning and, you know, we don't add any extra, like our thing is we're just going to get them to where they should be at this point, but then know that we have to have the, you know, the myofunctional therapy, like all the goals.
Now, how do you know, like when you're done expanding, do you just look at that tongue resting in the roof of the mouth and making sure that there isn't that overflow?
Yes. And we measure, of course, every time. So like I have certain numbers that I want to be in this ballpark, but let's say we have a kid who's, you know, 9, 10 and they're 38, 39, but then their tongue's still like, we could get a little bit more and we have space to do it. Why not? You know, I'd rather have them overexpanded, but of course not into buckle crossbite or like, you know, where the teeth don't fit together properly. We always want to have a good occlusion. And and that's why we upright a lot on the bottom, just to allow more expansion on the top, because we just don't want them to be in that buckle crossbite.
Right. Awesome. Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to leave with the listeners before we wrap up? This has been awesome.
No, I just love talking about this. I mean, I could sit here and talk about it. Thank you so much for having me, Brittany. This has been so much fun and I've been really, really looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Loria, for taking the time to come and chat with me, and we'll have you back on for round two soon.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of I Spy with My Maya Y. If you want to hear more about these episodes, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or feel free to contact me at hello@myctom.com. Don't forget to subscribe as well and let us know of any subject or guest speaker you'd like to hear from. Help spread the word by sharing today's episode on your social media page. You can find me on Facebook at CT Oral Facial Myology or Instagram handle CT_oralfacial_myology. Everybody have a wonderful day.